Welcome to Artists on Air. On today's show, I have the CPO of Molly, Rogier Shout. Every now and then, we bring English-speaking guests to this podcast. And today is one of these episodes, and it's for a very good reason. Because offering embedded payments can be a super smart move for B2B SaaS companies to add more value to their customers, to reduce friction, and to increase customer loyalty and customer lifetime value. Sounds good, right? With me is an absolute expert on this matter, and it's Rogier Shout, the CPO of Molly, who has previously also helped scale Klarna and Booking.com. Now, Molly is a European fintech offering embedded payments and all types of services around that. They pride themselves in making onboarding super simple and by offering ideal localized solutions, not just for the DACH region, but all over Europe. So in this episode, we'll discuss how they built out this strategy, how Molly provides value, especially for B2B tech companies, and what the AI era will bring for digital banking services and in customer support. So if you're curious how you could provide more value to your customers by offering embedded payments or financial services through your software, if you want to understand the software strategy of Molly, then listen to this episode with Molly's CPO, Rogier Shout, and with me, Janis Bandowski.
Artist on Air, der SaaS-Podcast für den deutschsprachigen Raum. Wertvolle Tipps von erfolgreichen Gründern, Top-Investoren und führenden Industriepartnern, die euch bei der Skalierung eures Unternehmens schnell und unkompliziert weiterhelfen. Zusammengestellt von Janis Bandowski, Julius Göllner und Matthias Ernst.
Rogier, welcome to Artist on Air.
Thank you very much, Janis. Pleasure to be here.
It's a great pleasure to have you on the show. We do most of the episodes in German, but now and then we have a heavyweight from international waters on the show. So I'm really glad to have you with us. You are the CPO, the Chief Product Officer of Molly. Molly is a company that mostly does embedded payments and payment transactions online. What does a CPO of Molly do, Rogier?
So, great question. As you said, Chief Product Officer, essentially what it means is I'm responsible for the state of our current product and also the future product strategy, of course, in line with where we want to go as a business overall. So we basically set out the direction, we make a concrete plan slash roadmap to make it happen, make some really clear priorities of where we want our product to go. And together with our colleagues in the company, mostly tech, but of course, we also deal with operations, finance, sales, marketing, all stakeholders. We then build the products. So that's essentially what our job is.
And I'm excited to dive in more deeply what product actually means in your context, because obviously Molly does not have a product, but there are many that need to fit together somehow. Now, let's talk a little bit how you got there. You were responsible before you joined Molly. I think you were handling all payments for Booking.com.
That's right. And even before that, actually, I think that's probably good context. I started my professional career postgraduate at Klarna in 2010 when it's really a small company. I studied business, so there was no like plan to go into, how do you say, product development or tech. Actually, that term almost didn't exist at that point in time. But I found out by doing essentially kind of setting both the product direction that I also really like the execution part and the building part together with the engineers and kind of that end-to-end type of process. And for me, that's the big difference between strategy and product. Strategy, you need to know where you want to go as a company. Product actually brings it to life. And I realized I truly enjoyed that part. So yeah, that was Klarna. I did that for 9 years, built on a number of the core product propositions over there. In between Klarna and Molly, I spent 2.5 years indeed at Booking, working on their online payment stack. It's actually very interesting to also look at payments from a customer perspective, right? So if you're only in a payments company, sometimes companies or people might become a bit too much obsessed about themselves, whereas you sometimes forget what it's all about for customers, which is actually succeeding as a business and of course, payment companies helping with that. So in that sense, the Booking.com times were really, really valuable. It's a great platform at very large scale. So that really, really helped me.
Super big and publicly listed, I think, also. Klarna is trying to achieve that. We're recording on the 15th of May. I think they just canceled their IPO this week. Sucks for you, I assume.
But fingers crossed that it will happen sooner or later.
No comment. I'm sure they will get there at some point in time. And yeah, they were a bit unlucky, which you sometimes can be with some of the macro things happening in the world. Let's see.
I don't want to spend too much time talking about the past, though. The reason why we're here is because embedded payments is something that is super relevant for B2B software entrepreneurs. And actually, I want to find out with you, what is the potential of payments and embedded payments for B2B software entrepreneurs? Because that's who's listening to our show. So before we jump right in, what actually are embedded payments, Rogier?
So great and very relevant question. Embedded payments is essentially when software companies embed payments as a core value proposition in their product. So in other words, when they offer payment solutions and other financial solutions at some point in time to their customers as a offering, that's embedded payments. So when payments becomes part of your business model.
So that you're not talking so much about the part where I have a B2B software and I say I want to charge my customers for it and they pay a monthly subscription. Is that an embedded payment or is that not an embedded payment?
So the monthly subscription can actually be charged with a payment solution. But what you typically see actually is that embedding payments allows B2B software companies, in addition to a SaaS fee, which you often charge for your software, to also charge in a different type of way. So what many B2B companies actually found out is that if you offer payments as a value proposition to your customers, you can actually align the incentives that you have and potentially give a freemium model, charge for the payments, and actually offer this so-called as a pay-as-you-go type of model instead of charging high fixed fee SaaS. And this is a trend that we actually really saw happening already 7-8 years ago in the US, where nowadays like 70% of, or 60-70% of revenue typically comes from payments and financial services for B2B SaaS companies.
And 60-70%.
That's right. For the bigger ones like Shopify, Toast, even Square, companies at really, really large scale, a big part of their revenue typically comes from payments nowadays. And that's simply because of that transactional element. They earn money when their customer earns money, and the customers pay for the service through payments. That's you really see that coming to Europe now nowadays as well.
You mentioned Spotify. With Spotify, it's very Shopify. You said Shopify. I confused it. Yeah. So Shopify is very easy to imagine. I find an online shop. I see these the school sweater or the school base cap. I order it. I pay the online merchant, and the merchant or Shopify is collecting the money on behalf of the merchant, passing on some of that to the merchant, and keeping a retainer. And in between that transaction could be Molly, for example. So I understand that. Simple. Can you give a very simple example from the world of B2B software where a transaction like that might be the case?
Yeah, sure. So I can have many examples, but I'll keep it short. For example, we have companies doing gym membership software, and you want to essentially handle the money flows, of course, with your customers. That's a typical way where Molly is positioned as an embedded payment solutions. We help customers charge the fees for them and actually offer that as a offering to their different gyms that they offer their software product to. So that's a typical example. We have other examples.
You chose a more complicated one there. I like that because I love going to the gym. I love doing sports, you know that. And it gets more complicated then because I need to redistribute. Let's say I offer a gym pass for 1,000 gyms, and then I need to redistribute that to gym A, yoga studio B, workout studio C. And can you facilitate with that as well?
Yeah, absolutely. So we are actually, for those type of services, we're a really good fit. So we allow companies to sell their software with that embedded payment solutions to all the users of their products. And that could be indeed like any gym, any yoga salon, or any franchise, if you're a franchise for that sake. And you're really in control as kind of the overall provider of that software. And that's really what all embedded payment solutions is about. You don't only want to offer it to a single customer, you want to do that kind of at scale, but still keep control over kind of the money flows. And of course, also monetize those transactions when they happen on your platform.
Got it. You also mentioned an example where 60 to 70% of revenues come from such embedded payment services. Now, I wonder if I'm a B2B software entrepreneur, where's the big opportunity for me here? How do I need to think about my business to really make this a meaningful revenue stream?
That's great. I think to take a step back, the question is always like, what problem can you solve or what opportunity is there to help your customers? And I think there's a couple of things. So when you embed payments into core of your offering, A, you can offer a nicer experience to your customers. They don't need to go somewhere else, sign up with another payments provider to actually get going. It actually is part of the core of your product. So I think that's one very important element. Secondly, as a offer of those solutions, from a customer stickiness perspective, it's actually really, really helpful. It allows you to tie customers closer to you, offer a nicer experience, as I already mentioned. Also offer different types of financial products. For example, you could start with an online solution and then add in-store payments later. I think third and probably most important, it also allows you to get more customers on your platform because it allows for, as I already mentioned before, it allows you to attract customers with a lower barrier of entry. For example, offering this software for free, but then earn the revenue on top of payments. So all these kinds of things, they actually help both you as a platform, but also your sub-customers get a better product.
Okay. And people do not necessarily see Molly in that process. Is that correct? Because it's fully embedded. So let's take me for an example. Many of the people who listen sooner or later buy a ticket for the Artist Summit. They buy through a company called Eventbrite. Yep. They pay online. And it could be that Molly is somewhere in there, but the Molly logo never shows.
If you want it, the Molly logo indeed never shows. And I think the great thing about the product that we offer is we offer both like a no-code or very low-code solution where essentially you can get going without having a lot of engineering resources. And there are sometimes the Molly logo might appear in a co-branded onboarding experience. But we also offer a much more sophisticated way of integration where everything is built on top of APIs. And where there's no logo visible from us as a payments company. So we offer both flavors and it really depends on the needs. But indeed, typically, customers integrate this very deeply and they all do it in their own branding. And that's also the nice thing. There's no feeling of a handover to someone else for the customers of these software providers.
All right. And how does the money flow then?
The money flows, and this is a very important point. Payment companies, they are regulated businesses. We make sure that money is safe and protected. Also, in case something happens with the platform, things can go wrong in payments. So money flows from the payer of the subscription or service into our accounts. These accounts are, how do you call it, protected accounts. So they're always safe in that sense. And then we essentially follow the payout instructions from the platform. So in other words, if the platform says like, hey, please transfer this amount of money to my sub-customer and keep a fee for me, the fee that I earn with software, we facilitate that. So we essentially facilitate all money flows and the platform doesn't touch the money. They're actually not allowed by regulation to touch the money unless their own revenue. So their own revenue they will get, but everything else is orchestrated by us as a platform. So Molly is in that sense in the money flow, the platform is not.
All right. And how difficult is it to set something like this up?
It's actually, we've made it pretty easy. And that's something we're really proud about. We essentially have this technology that allows you to connect customers to you using this OAuth technology. And it's pretty neat and pretty simple. We also offer very great and intuitive dashboards for example, adding new customers, having them sign up in your service. And if you want, you can make that a bit more integrated and embedded, building it on top of API. So one of the things we're really proud about at Molly is that we've made that very easy. What we see sometimes in the market is that there's obviously we're not the only ones offering these type of solutions. Other companies make it a lot more complex and require you to put in a lot more engineering resources. So yeah, that's one of our sweet spots, I would say.
All right. So you say you have a super fast onboarding process, simple onboarding, and I can collect payments fairly easily and get the distributions. Is it something that I could do clicking myself through, or do I need to be in touch with engineers?
You could actually do it as a chief commercial officer without having engineers by essentially signing up for our service and managing everything out of a dashboard. Now, in reality, we see many of the software companies using some kind of technology integration in one shape or form. And that's essentially because they really care about the experience. They typically want to at least embed certain components. Yeah, our platform allows you to basically mix and match. So embed the flows that you want to embed and maybe leave some of the other complexities up to Molly.
All right. Okay. And then if we, you know, Rogier, that I really like to make it specific many times. Yeah. What is a process where you say B2B software entrepreneurs could go onto a website now and look at a process where payment solutions are integrated really nicely, where you think one of your customers has done a great job?
Yeah, I think that's a great question. So let me call out, for example, Booking Experts. Booking Experts is a software platform for vacation rental parks. Essentially, they offer a full suite, a CMS for managing your holiday park, accepting bookings, both online but also on site. So if you would actually book a vacation holiday rental at one of those parks, the payment solution provided by that holiday park is fully offered by Molly. And essentially, that's embedded into the software of Booking Experts. And as a customer, as an end customer paying, it's a pretty nice experience. You'll see a very optimized, good-looking checkout, which is provided by us. But also for that holiday rental park, the way how their website looks like, how the experience is built, it really looks top-notch professional. And you're talking about campings, right? So, for example, we have a camping here in Amsterdam, Camping Zeeburg, that has a lot of German customers. One of the nice things that they
actually... The Dutch really like camping, and now you're telling me the Germans really like camping. Around,
we found out. And at this camping, for example, like a lot of the payments happen through PayPal because they have a lot of German guests. And this camping actually, out of the core solution of this holiday software, could offer PayPal out of the get-go to their customers and hereby get a lot of additional customers coming to their camping park. And I think it's just such a great example because holiday parks are not known for being super sophisticated from a technology point of view. Mm-hmm. And this software with Molly's embedded payment solutions actually allows them to offer pretty top-notch experience.
All right. Actually, it takes me back to my youth. I went to a campground almost every week, went with my parents, and they had a very, very advanced payment system in the 90s already. It was like I could buy ice cream and fry French fries and whatnot. And about once a month, my parents had to go there and pick up the bill. And so it was buy now, pay later, and have it paid by your parents, but very, very offline and all in cash. So I'm glad you're taking that forward a few years.
No, that's great. And nowadays, we do exactly the same. So at check-in, actually, you get sometimes a wristband, and we connect it to the payments credential of the guest, and they pay at the end of the experience on the holiday park. So it's indeed funny that the needs don't change over time, but technology and payments does.
That's cool. That's what it should do. You mentioned now PayPal. Of the Germans just love PayPal. Is localization a big part of your work, Rogier?
Yeah, localization is absolutely essential. I mean, we are 100% focused on Europe. And one of our edges and promises to our customers is that we go deeper when it comes to localization than what our competitors typically do. So that means offering a fully localized onboarding experience for your customers with local KYC, pre-fill of important data points and more, offering the local payment solutions, of course. That sounds of course, but there's a lot of new payment solutions coming all the time. You need to stay up, and that's something that we do. Having the right accounting types of integration. So yeah, localization is pretty essential. And in order to succeed in Europe, and that's what companies typically forget, that is the key to win. So we're 100% dedicated at Europe, fully localized. And
Are you a Dutch company founded in Amsterdam as well?
We are indeed founded in Amsterdam, and we're nowadays active across an entire EEA and fully focused on Europe, as I said. But yes.
What's the most common mistake that B2B software entrepreneurs make when it comes to accepting payments online or in starting to accept embedded payments? What are some of the pitfalls that you've seen where integrations didn't work or it really was not the success that the founders had hoped it would be? that you can share your wisdom here to prevent people from repeating those mistakes?
Sure. I think it's two or three. I think one is, as with any product you build, you need to have the right solution for your audience. That also means having the right payment solution for your customer. And that simply means really understanding what your customers need and want. So if you, for example, talk about in-person payments, there's many different types of solutions and devices possible, from pure software-based to a bit more advanced. You need to really understand what your customers want. And what we see many of these companies do is they want something that looks good or that someone else has, but it might not work for their customer base. And that's obviously where we try to jump in with our vertical knowledge and really advise them on way to go.
So you do have those data, obviously, and you do have the experience. Do you sit down with entrepreneurs who are just starting out, or do you offer free reports or something like that where people can read up?
Yeah, we offer a numerous type of, white papers, and we have a lot of, material available for customers to familiarize themselves with, including case studies and other things. But we also offer great support and engagement in the solutions phase to help them design essentially the best product for them. So that's also one of the edges that we have. You can actually speak with human beings where technology cannot solve it. We help you both in the pre-sales process, but also afterwards when you go live.
And is there a bigger trend? Do people, most of our listeners serve clients in the DACH region, that how payment has changed in the DACH region? I know SEPA used to be big. Now credit cards are taking over also in the business context. PayPal is catching up. What's the trend that I'm missing here?
I would say that in a few ways, of course, we like to talk about big trends changing. Some things are very stable. I think the way how people pay online, you still have the same relevant payment method. You have to buy now, pay later in the DACH region, the Klarna and the likes, Billy and those type of companies for B2B that are doing really, really well. PayPal continues to be strong. Cards indeed is growing. I would say if I look at the trends, there's probably two bigger trends. I would say one is that bank transfers and SEPA is becoming more instant. So you see a lot of new solutions, Molly including, coming up with new propositions around instant bank transfers and getting the confirmation in real time. And that's actually solving a big problem where you used to have the previous generation of the Sofort, Uberweisung and those type of solutions often not being real time. These solutions are actually now becoming real time, also as a result of regulation. I would say a second thing is that with the geopolitical climate, there's a bit of a backlash to kind of global payment systems, even PayPal being, of course, an American company, but also the big card schemes, of course. So we do expect some of the local card schemes and the local payment solutions to get even stronger. There's also this European initiative, of course, ongoing called Wero of bringing bank payments in a unified way to Europe. So yeah, there's definitely some bigger changes, but these changes happen over many years.
Mm-hmm. Is there an opportunity to create, this is completely off topic, to create a European credit card? Is that a business over? It just pops up. I never thought about it, but now that we talk about it.
I think the opportunity is definitely there. Now, the challenge in Europe, I would almost say, as always, is that it's super hard to get everyone aligned because everyone has their own interests. Even in Germany, you deal with like 2,000-3,000 banks that are organized in different banking associations. And then, of course, you have France, which has a big, powerful card scheme called Carte Bancaire. And everybody kind of has their different views. So as long as people don't have the shared European interest, it's really hard to get something off the ground like that. And maybe now that is actually more likely to succeed with the current geopolitical climate. But there's definitely that opportunity in the market.
I'll put that down here on my list of not so easy, but rather big ideas to challenge Visa and Master with a European solution.
No, absolutely. Maybe right. Some of the other pitfalls, maybe coming back to that question that we see entrepreneurs happen. I think the biggest thing that they might get wrong is underestimating the effort of doing embedded payment solutions. And not deciding very consciously about what is my responsibility as a B2B software platform versus the payments company. So long story short, what we see many of our competitors do is offering great technology, but leaving the responsibility of chargebacks, payment operations, customer service, fulfillment up to the B2B SaaS platform, which suddenly means that these SaaS platforms need to hire like two or three full teams to actually run their embedded payment solution while they should be focused on their core business. And we've taken a somewhat different approach. I mean, in the era of AI and just in general, like the competitiveness out there with a not so fast growing market, you should be focused on your core business. And we have this full service package where in addition to doing the payments, we also take care of onboarding. We take care of risk and compliance, of localization, also of the support to your customers. In other words, when people deal with money, they want to be able to talk with an agent if something goes wrong or if there's an issue. And we found that it is extremely important for these B2B software companies that there's a specialized provider doing that for them instead of in the early life cycle of your company hiring a customer service desk just to deal with payments. So often that's something that B2B software companies overlook, the operational element of actually embedding payments and making a very conscious decision around like what type of PSP fits my needs.
So if you say you offer more than your competition does there, do you offset with that with higher fees? That because then the B2B SaaS customers that you serve save internal costs so they can pay you more? Or how does your business model work in that regard?
No, not typically, to be honest with you. I think that's a huge cost for you, right?
Molly invests heavily, so how do you compensate?
No, I mean, the way how we compensate is that we have onboarded over 400,000 customers in the past since the beginning of Molly, and we have more than 250,000 customers actively. We are trained to run the platform in a very efficient, automated, and high-tech way. And we are actually also used to serve reasonably small end customers directly with our customer service, but of course, before that, great technology. So the entire essence of our business model is we are used to kind of serve those customers in that kind of way. That also means we extend that business model to those SaaS platforms, which means that for us, it's not a big lift to add our service level to their sub-customers. Essentially, it's in the DNA of our business to do that. And that's why we can do it without actually having to charge more than our competition. Some of our competitors, they actually focus more on the enterprise market. That means like the global platforms like eBay, Amazon, and those type of companies. Companies that can actually afford to have their own payments teams, their own operations teams, and a lot more. If anything, at the end, the total cost of ownership of those types of solutions is typically higher. So, essentially, I think that summarizes it in a nutshell.
Yeah. All right. Now, when we talk about customer service and agents that you're able to talk to these days in 2025, we cannot skip the topic of automation and AI. How will that change for Molly going forward? We've seen, I'd say, sub-ideal communication from Klarna on the topic that you have connections to. How have you approached this topic internally?
Yeah. So any company needs to look at how AI in any part of the business, not just customer service, can make their business either more efficient or more successful. In other words, accelerate growth. And we've also done that. And one of the things that we're really proud about is that we've built an AI bot that gives you really relevant answers to your questions based on the data of your business. So in other words, we've actually tied the large language models to our internal APIs, which makes sure that the majority of the answers that you get, for example, when do I get paid, or how much revenue did I process with in the last 7 days? Or what's my highest paying customer or the most loyal customer in my customer base? You actually get really relevant answers back. Now, that said, AI can't solve anything. So we also made sure
that tool internally, or are you linking to
We have built it largely internally in partnership with a AI startup from Silicon Valley. So we've done some of that in collaboration, but most of the technology is actually proprietary. So that said, if you have an issue that AI can't solve, you need to make sure that there's a very good and swift handover to a human being. And that's also something that we encourage and that we make sure to facilitate, so that customers don't get in this endless loop of getting potentially wrong answers to the questions that they have, and get served with the right level of urgency. So we combine AI with great customer service. And of course, our goal is to, with the best technologies out there, automate as much as possible, but never forget that human touch of service when needed.
And do you expect when you grow now, will you hire more people or deploy more technology in customer service? What does the future look like there?
I think it's both. We definitely will deploy more technology and try to solve more use cases on the basis of technology. Actually, at the end, everybody would prefer that. Everybody would be preferring to be having technology solve their problem. But the reason why we're still hiring more people in this area is because we're growing really fast in different markets, opening up new markets in Europe. And it also requires us to kind of hire more people. So if you look at the total ratio of people to technology, it kind of has gone down a little bit. So already 40-45% of incoming queries is solved with AI today. But that doesn't mean that you do not need to grow your customer base. And obviously making bold statements around like people will disappear or our goal is to kind of take people away, I really don't believe in that. Like at the end, you need to do what's right of your business for your business. And what we see is that you need a combination of both to succeed. And of course, facing the challenge of ideally becoming more efficient at scale. So reducing the amount of people to the total of customer queries you can solve.
All right. Thanks for venturing down that route with me, Rogier. Then let's say well done. You've convinced me. I do want to offer an embedded payment service for my B2B software startup. And I'm going to go with Molly. What do I need to know for the rollout? What will make my rollout successful, or what will it make it fail?
Great question. So I would say first, know who is your customer and know what they need. So you need to decide on what products do I want to offer to my customer? What markets do I want to cover? How do I actually want to price? Do I want to essentially offer a freemium model, or do I just want to offer a high SaaS fee? Then secondly, how do I actually want to get paid myself, and how do I want money flows to work for my customers? You need to kind of think about that as a B2B SaaS owner and kind of look at kind of different options. And third, like to the question or to the pitfall that we just discussed, how much do I want to invest in this? In other words, do I want to do this with one person, or do I actually feel that we should probably have a small team building some technology plus building some operations around it? In other words, how much do you want and can you spend on implementing this? And based on that, based on your needs, the different solutions out there on the market and how you want to solve it, pick out the right payment solution, which of course, as you said, should be Molly in this case. So really know who your customer is and build the right type of integration based on your need and the different flavors we offer.
Okay. I got it. The next question is going to be a tough one. I'm not sure if you'll like it, but anyone who's still listening will consider Molly if they're thinking about offering a better payments. Is there a good comparison site where I can see what other payment solutions are available to me, or what your competition looks like? I don't expect of you to say there's a much better solution than we offer, but maybe you can offer where people can get an overview of what's out there.
I would say probably use AI browsers like Perplexity to essentially ask what different providers are available and what are their pros and cons. That's honestly better than any comparison site I've seen at the moment. So I would definitely want to I would definitely start there as a B2B software company.
Do you actively engage in LLM optimization strategies already at Molly?
I would say not from a search perspective yet. Maybe that's an area for the future we should really look at. But no, we don't.
I know I should be directing this question at the CMO, not at the CPO. That's a bit unfair, but it's a topic that came up more recently because the search engine optimization is kind of being replaced a bit, or let's say is getting a new co-star, the LLM optimization. So I'm just curious what companies are doing.
What we are doing a lot is, if you look at prospective customers, LLM models can, of course, give you loads of data nowadays around what types of businesses they are. So in other words, they can make sure that leads are enriched in a better way and tell you more about those customers, who they're working with today, et cetera, et cetera. So that's an area that we're very actively engaged in. But search engine optimization for LLM, to my knowledge, not so much yet.
All right. Okay. And then I'd like to, that's something, now we're in the present, talking very much about the here and now of today. But if we pull forward the future 5 or 10 years, we've touched upon AI here and there already, but you also said that payment patterns online haven't really changed all that much over the past few years. Now let's look out 5 to 10 years. How will we be paying online in 5 to 10 years? What changes? What does the future of online payment look like?
Yeah, so I think that's a great question. And of course, as always, it's very hard to look into a crystal ball. But I would say two things, and I'll take a more B2C perspective and a B2B perspective. So from a B2C perspective, there's a lot of talk around AI agents completing payment transactions on behalf of human beings in the future, and potentially human beings being left with the two-factor authentication. In other words, there's no reason why in the future you would not instruct an AI agent to make a purchase for you and use your payment credential, and then you having to authenticate that. So that's the thing that any company needs to kind of think around, like how will that checkout experience look like and who's actually going to be the one of checking out. This trend will, of course, go slow. There's also a lot of regulation around that. Like, what do you need to do as a consumer when you actually make a payment transaction and that kind of stuff? So, but
is that something that you are very concerned about in your job already? Building the right APIs that services can communicate with in the background. So actually, what I want to say ideally as a consumer is to say, take a photo of a shoe and says, look, this is a really cool shoe. Can you please order it for me at the cheapest possible source? And then the AI needs to understand, okay, this is, it's the new, I don't know, which your favorite brand is, Adidas or Nike or On model. And then it needs to know my shoe size. And then it needs to find a retailer that has this color code available. And then there's a payment provider checks in with me. Is it okay? I found this shoe at 120 euros. It can arrive in 3 days. Do you want me to proceed? Are you working on that already?
Of course we are, because like you need to really understand where this is going. And obviously it's still very early days, but yeah, it's going to be the future at some point in time that there's going to be experiences like that. Technically it's possible, so it will happen. We are not concerned about it yet, though. I'm actually quite excited to kind of explore with the team of like how to facilitate those type of transactions. And we're also the type of company that wants to be among the first companies trying to basically facilitate those type of transactions. So
how far out is that?
I would say that probably technically you will see demos within the next year or maybe within the next 2 years before kind of something like this becomes mainstream. It probably takes 5 to 10 years, but the impact is going to be very, very big. So I definitely expect that to be a bit further out. And of course, also regulators will have an opinion around this. There's going to be a lot of talking about what should be allowed, what should not be allowed. How do we make sure nobody's frauding you? How do you keep it safe? And there's a lot of things to think about. But I think you'll see the first proof of concept appearing in the next 12 months for sure, if not faster.
I think Amazon has announced last year that they're putting a big bet on that. How big is your team? How does that compare to Amazon's team? And how can you beat them?
We have an incubating team of like 3 to 4 people looking at this type of stuff. We're not like a team of 300, 400, 500 people looking at this all the time. But I think that's fine. I think it really comes down to being curious and understand what technologies are out there. And building proof of concepts actually goes better in small teams than big teams. Then obviously, if you need to go big on something. You need to deploy more resources. And we have like 500 engineers in the company. I'm pretty sure that if it becomes a big priority, we'll be able to be competitive. And actually on Amazon, they experimented 10 years ago already with like walking into a store and walking out without paying. It never really took off at mass because it was just too difficult to kind of make it happen. Maybe they're going to succeed this time. So it's also important to realize that what we're talking about right now is not completely new. Companies have been experimenting with these types of technologies for years. And maybe to your earlier question around the other trend, I think if you look at it more from a B2B software company, you'll see more services than just payments being embedded into the core of those software platforms. Think around cards, think around in-person payments, think around invoicing solutions and accounts payable solutions, so paying bills, for example, essentially core banking products. And that's also something that we already see happening and product we are, of course, building on already at Molly and will soon start to offer to our platforms too. So it allows B2B software companies to offer a much broader set of financial services to their customers. And I think that's going to be really interesting. And I actually even forgot to talk about capital. So provision of like working capital and cash management type of solutions. So I think that's going to be a big trend in the embedded payment space too, where it's more likely that customers will buy financial services products from software companies than maybe from their traditional banks. And that's something that obviously we're A, fascinated about, but also aim to facilitate.
Are you the new bank? Are traditional banks are going to be replaced with players like you?
Definitely. No, we definitely are going to take a stab at that. And we're not a fully regulated bank today. You never know in the future.
But you do.
We offer payment solutions, which used to be something that only banks offered 10, 15 years ago. So there's no reason why we wouldn't be offering other financial products that banks offer today. But yeah, it becomes very loaded when people ask you, like, do you become a bank? And I'm like, well, we already compete with banking in many different areas, but more niched. And you'll see us broadening the types of services we offer over time, which maybe at some point in time means that people start looking at you as a bank.
All right. Now we've pulled forward one of my last questions already a little bit, because I want to ask you, what are the projects that you are most excited about that you're working on as a CPO right now? And I guess integrated AI-assisted checkouts and shopping solutions is probably one of them. But can you name a couple more?
Yeah, sure. The second one we just touched upon, we're looking at all kinds of new financial services solutions we're testing out with our customers all the time. We have a culture and product strategy of testing out new bets very quickly, iterate quickly, and then either decide to grow these efforts or actually kill them if it doesn't really work. So
what's the one you're most excited about right now? Your coolest bet.
Pretty neat card solution coming up. Like, it's super hard as a business to get access to debit and credit cards for your employees and distribute those to your employees in a nice way and actually managing it out of one platform.
There's players like Moss and Pleo, and there's a few big ones. Is it going in that direction?
Yeah, definitely. But the point is that at the moment, you need to do a payment solution, B, another company for cards, yet another company for banking, yet another company. So I think the power is also going to be very much into that integrated type of experience, where as an owner of a business, you can actually build up your team and actually distribute financial services among your team in like a way that B2C neobanks have solved, but what really hasn't materialized in B2B in a consolidated type of way yet. So the bundling of financial services for B2B, essentially the B2B neobank of the future, is something that we're extremely excited about and that keeps me awake at night in a good way. And I think the second thing is really, if you look at what's happening in-person payments, so the physical payments in stores, I mean, that's also kind of fascinating. The technologies are really changing. It's going all from legacy hardware to a combination of pure software in-store and a combination of the next generation of hardware devices that you can also use for many other things. For example, your table booking app in a restaurant you can combine in one with a payments device. Those type of things we're also very bullish on and actually very, very active in. And that's quite fascinating because you see the adoption curve of those new types of hardware devices taking off really, really rapidly.
Okay. What are the new type of hardware devices? I'm still thinking about people are running around with their phones and their wallets on their arms.
It's phones and any hardware devices that have NFC are now becoming the payment instruments of the future. So 10 years forward, there's absolutely no reason why, unless there's a very specific high-end type of payments need, why there would be separate devices just for payments. Like absolutely no need. So people will have it out of their smartphone, out of their tablet that they're using for their business anyway. And it's a completely next generation for payments technology, also in a way on how it works on the back end. So I think that's pretty fascinating because these devices, they're pretty clunky. They break. You can do so many things on your current devices that payments is really next.
All right. So that's a big one you're excited about. One more.
We really love building cash flow solutions for entrepreneurs, for software businesses and the founders under them. We still see how hard it is to kind of get credit for companies nowadays. Unfortunately, in Europe, we're still way too conservative. We make it way too hard to grow your business as a company. So we've actually built up a pretty big business around capital for our customers. And we're looking at all kinds of different ways to grow that very quickly.
Is that something like revenue-based financing?
That's right. It's revenue-based financing, but we're also expanding this into a broader set of credit products. For example, we offer an invoicing solution, tying credit to get paid a little bit faster as a business so you can actually run the business specific to that invoice. And other forms of credit.
You're attacking on all fronts. That sounds like something that Klarna or Billy would do today.
That's right. And Billy does it, for example, in the checkout. But we've already, in the last 4 years, we've done over 200 million euro in capital provision for our customers with really, really great results. Customers being happy with it, cash being quickly available, and customers being able to grow their business quicker. So I think it's just so fascinating that companies like ours that started with kind of the core of payments, you come up with an idea a couple of years back, you test it, and it actually grows to something really quickly. And now it really tastes like more because the challenge is still very, very, very present at the moment. So yeah, that's just another thing we're really, really excited about.
Sounds like it, yeah. All right, I'll stay tuned. Rogier, we'll stay in touch. Before I can let you go, I have one final question because we met over a great dinner in Hamburg the other day, but yep. I know you live in Amsterdam. So where, if you had a restaurant recommendation for our community, which city and where should they go? Can be breakfast, lunch, dinner, anything.
Great. So I have to stick to Amsterdam, right? So there's Money 2020. A lot of businesses are coming there soon. I personally love restaurant the Kas in Amsterdam. It's a really nice green concept in a very busy city, kind of an oasis of peace and calmness, where they basically grow their own vegetables in their gardens and many gardens out there. And it really kind of meets the, how do you call it, say, high tech and being very innovative with food. I would say almost unfortunately, they got recognized with a Michelin star, which means you have to book 3 months in advance.
And what is it called?
The Kas, K-A-S, and then K-A-S.
The Kas in Amsterdam. I'm sure when someone's in Amsterdam, they should try to get a table. I don't know if the table booking is integrated with Molly yet. And then they can talk about online payments or anything else and have great food.
Yeah, pretty likely it is actually.
All right. Rogier, thanks so much for taking the time for letting us look over your shoulder, your work as a CPO at Molly. That was really cool talking about the future of finance. And thank you so much for taking the time.
Thanks, Janus, for having me. It was a pleasure.
Thanks for listening. If you don't want to wait until you meet Rogier and me again at the Artist Summit on October 9th in Berlin, then shoot me an email to yannis@artist.net. Happy to do an intro to Rogier, or just connect on LinkedIn. Bye-bye.